You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
A decade from now, when the Trump years are an awful memory, along with NATO, the security alliance that kept the peace after World War II, an alliance and a peace that are both being dismantled by a spoiled child, a memory along with our last chance to avoid catastrophic climate change, a memory along with the idea that the occupants of the White House are not there to profit off their tenure. A decade from now, we're going to remember all the wrong names. We're going to remember Jared and Steve and Ivanka and Sean and Melania and Flynn and Manafort and Paul and Mitch, maybe even Tiffany. We're going to remember the worst. We won't even have to try. Their names are going to be in the news and in our faces for years to come. We're going to be hearing their names long after they're all rotting in fucking prison, fingers crossed. The worst, we will remember. They will be impossible to forget. We have to make an effort, though, to remember the best. Ricky Best, Taliesin Myrdan Namkhai Metchi, and Micah David Cole Fletcher. They were the three men who intervened when a white supremacist, a deranged Trump supporter, you know what, a Trump supporter. At this point, we don't need to qualify Trump supporter with deranged. A white supremacist, a Trump supporter, got on a train in Portland, Oregon, and began to scream racist and anti-Muslim and anti-immigrant abuse at two women, both of them brown, one of them wearing a headscarf. Two of the men who stood up to that bigotry and that rage, two of the men who stood up to Donald Trump's vision for America, two of the men who refused to be bystanders, died on that train, their throats slashed. One was badly wounded and almost died. The president, the tweeter-in-chief, a man whose name we're never going to forget, that malignant, metastasizing asshole in the Oval Office, he couldn't bring himself to mention their names this weekend. Ricky and Taliesin, the men who died, and Micah, the guy who was grievously wounded. He didn't condemn the violence or acknowledge his own complicity in it, his responsibility for it. Trump did have time to tweet this weekend, sending praise to a newly elected member of Congress who allegedly... Well, you know what? There's an audio tape and there are eyewitness accounts, so fuck allegedly. A newly elected member of Congress who assaulted a reporter. Trump had time to complain also about how unfair the media is to him still and again and always. But Trump couldn't say the names of the three men who stood up to bigotry this weekend in Portland, Oregon, two of whom gave their lives to protect two of their fellow human beings from one of his supporters. Our government, our federal government, entirely controlled by the party enabling Trump, isn't going to remember their names either. Jared and Steve and Ivanka and Flynn and Manafort and Paul and Mitch and Donald, their crimes, their violations, the poisons that they are injecting into our body politic, the damage they're doing to our democracy and our planet, that will be their monument. It seems to me we're also going to need a monument to the resistance, to the resistors. Not one monument, but lots of them, to these guys and other heroes of the resistance. I was in London last week. There are monuments everywhere you go in London, statues of kings and queens and generals and admirals and prime ministers. And there's a phrase that you see again and again if you pause to read the plaques, which is something weirdos like me do, erected by public subscription. Nelson's column in Trafalgar Square, erected by public subscription. There are two GoFundMe efforts underway right now to raise money for the families of the two men who died. Ricky Best, a veteran who survived tours in Afghanistan and Iraq and 23 years in the military, only to be killed on Memorial Day weekend in Portland, Oregon. Ricky Best, who has a wife and four teenage children. And Taliesin Myrdan Namkhai Metchi, a recent graduate of Reed College in Oregon who just started his first job. There's a GoFundMe effort for Ricky and Taliesin's families that's hit its goal, and there's one also to help pay the medical expenses of Micah Fletcher, because this is America, where you can do the right thing, the thing that everyone hopes they would be brave enough to do in the same circumstance, and then be bankrupted by medical expenses. Again, both these GoFundMe efforts have hit their goals. Once these really immediate and pressing needs are covered, the needs of Ricky's family and Taliesin's family, Micah's medical expenses, it seems to me that maybe another fundraising campaign may be in order. To erect a monument by public subscription to the bravery and decency that these three men demonstrated in Portland on Friday. Place that monument in Portland at the spot where Ricky and Taliesin died and Mika almost gave up his life. Again, by public subscription. Because we need to remember their names too. We need to remember their names more. Okay, coming up today on the show, tons of your questions, lots of my answers, plus a couple of songs from Rachel Lark from our Portland Easter show, and on the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, a sleep expert joins us to discuss the rare disorder of hypersomnia. How does that relate to sex? You'll have to listen and subscribe to find out. Today's episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by 5-4 Club, fashionable men's clothing curated and sent right to your door. Get 50% off your first package at 5-4 Club when you use the offer code SAVAGE. The Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Nature Box, delicious healthy snacks shipped right to your door. For 50% off your first box, go to naturebox.com/savage. Thanks to Audible for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Be sure to check out Where Should We Begin with Esther Perel, the original audio series that takes you inside Esther's office. I love Esther Perel and her work, Mating in Captivity, State of Affairs, and so will you. Go to audible.com/Esther.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 29-year-old straight girl living in Toronto. For the past year, I've been dating someone who I've been performing with in the comedy world. It started out casual, but got very serious very quickly, and it got very confusing. We recently ended it because he has a terrible depression. He'd been going in and out of it while I was seeing him, and recently it's been terrible. And he told me that intellectually he wants to be with me, but he doesn't feel anything right now. He doesn't feel anything for me or for anything, he says. This breakup has been incredibly difficult for me. I've had anxiety attacks where I hyperventilated about 3 or 4 times now. I hadn't seen him after we broke up for about 2 weeks, but when I ran into him this weekend, I basically forced a conversation with him. We ended up sleeping together. My question is, how do I stay away from him? I will see him out because of our line of work. And when I do, I feel extreme anxiety coming on and a jealousy where, like, I have to go home with him, even though he's told me he cannot be with me. I don't feel like myself, and I've never been this way in any other relationship or breakup. And I really just want to save my sanity and stop embarrassing myself in front of someone who is rejecting me and I don't think is capable of loving me. I'm just not sure what I can do.
You recognize that this guy is incapable of loving you and has mental health issues that he probably needs to handle on his own. He needs to get himself in good working order before he could be in a relationship and be capable of loving someone, certainly capable of loving you. So it has to end. It has to be over. It can't go on. And that's sad and it's upsetting. And you're clearly upset. If when you think about him, you have panic attacks and hyperventilate, that's awful. But what you got to do and what you have to do for yourself is try, even if you have to wrench it, try to put it in perspective, wrench it into perspective. You were with a guy for a year and it didn't work out. You invested him in this relationship, as we do when we are getting to know someone or maybe hope to be falling in love with them. You invested in him this idea of a future with him. You imagined a future with him that is not going to come to pass because of his damage. And that's sad, but, and here's the point where you put it into perspective, look around. It's really common what you're going through. A relationship that filled you with hope for a future ended. That happens every day to hundreds of millions of people. There are lots of people walking around feeling the feelings that you're feeling right now, which doesn't make them any less painful or acute or personal. But look around, put it in perspective. Other people have been right where you're at right now and they have moved through it. They are fine. They have grieved it and the wound has scabbed over and they are onto a new relationship or they are pursuing passions that fill them with joy. And even if they're not in a new relationship right now, they are content and they are engaged, and they are not engaged to be married, but engaged with their passions, engaged with the world, and they aren't hyperventilating anymore. They're not in the throes of the immediate emotional turmoil of the breakup, and you will get there too. You'll get there faster if you stop bucking this guy when you see him. You'll get there faster if you go out of your way to avoid him. Now that you know that if you guys interact, if you guys have a conversation, you're likely to land in bed together again, and that's going to tear all the scabs open again. Don't talk to him. Don't hang out with him. Be polite. Be civil, especially if you move through the same comedy circles and you are in each other's periphery. Be nice. Be polite. Be civil. But be a little short and cut him a wide berth and spare yourself the strain of having to pretend to be friends right now, because it's too painful for you. And you now know that pretending to be friends, pretending to be friendly, there's a high chance that you guys are going to wind up fucking again and ripping all those scabs open again. And that would be fine if there was some possibility that he would suddenly get whole and, you know, the breakup was a mistake and he was going to circle back and you guys were going to pick up where you left off. But you know that's not possible in this instance. So there's no upside to fucking this guy again. There's no upside to attempting to be friends right now. Maybe some point down the road you can have a friendship and have a professional relationship. But now, no. Now you know. Now, no. It can't happen for you now, not with him. So lean into the panic attacks, have some ice cream, go to the gym, hang out with your friends, get out of the house, go places where you know he's not going to be, and try and to remind yourself when you are hyperventilating or feeling panicked or feeling really crushed or picked on by the universe that there are hundreds of millions of people all around the world in the same boat that you are right now, and that boat ain't sinking, and pretty soon that boat pulls into dock and you can get the fuck off it.
Hey, Dan, I am a married straight male living in the Pacific Northwest, and I have a question about cuckolding. The idea of having my wife be cuckold, if that's how you say it, is something that's always been a huge interest to me, but I can never bring it up to her. Knowing her and knowing how she is, there's no way she would ever go for it. And that's not something that I necessarily want to bring up because, again, she would never be okay with that. So my question to you is, do you have any tips or tricks or things that I could try that could get close to that, that would somehow allow me to live that fantasy while still respecting her wishes?
I don't direct people to Reddit boards very often, but I'm going to direct you to reddit.com/r/cuckold. It is the forum for cuckolds and hot wives. It's a community, a subreddit. I don't even know what they call it. I'm not up with the Reddit jargon and lingo. But a lot of what you'll find there, you know, find some people posting porn and posting stories, but a lot of what you find there are guys with questions a lot like yours. This is something that turns me on. I'm interested in this. I don't know how to roll this out to the wife, or when I tried to roll it out to the wife, she didn't seem particularly amenable to it. And those guys are getting a lot of advice at that Reddit board from guys whose wives are now cuckolding them about what they did and the things that they said and how they talked their wives into it. And now their wives enjoy it. And sometimes the wives themselves are in this subreddit talking about what worked and what their husbands did and said that made them feel comfortable enough to explore this rather extreme kink. Short of that, if you want something from me that you can do with your wife, one way to communicate to her that you are not the jealous type, that you enjoy the idea of her with other guys, is initiating dirty talk during sex, where you share, and she is encouraged to share, you both share together, previous sexual experiences. Now, some people aren't secure enough with themselves, and they are sexually insecure enough in their relationship to do that sort of thing. They get panicky that, you know, any mention of a past sexual partner in a positive light, you know, a past sexual experience with somebody else, is somehow a critique of your current sexual partner, that this previous experience was so great, and in comparison, this experience we're having right now, not so good. But this seems, in my like brief reading of reddit.com/r/cuckold, this seems the first step, the sharing of stories, the sharing of past experiences as a form of dirty talk, and the demonstrating to the spouse, male or female, that this turns you on, these images, these mental images, these thoughts of them with other people in the past. And eventually you broach the subject of them with other people in the present or future. Good luck. This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by NatureBox. Delicious, healthy, tasty snacks delivered right to your door. Get 50% off your first order when you go to naturebox.com/savage. You know, sometimes me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth are trapped in our sweaty little studio for hours at a time, banging out the calls. Sometimes that happens in the afternoon, and we're all getting a little hangry. And that is when we start rifling through the blessed bags of NatureBox snacks. Thank God for NatureBox. NatureBox makes snacks that actually taste great and are better for you, created with high-quality ingredients that are free from artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners, so you can feel great about snacking. They have cookies like vanilla bean wafers, savory crisp snacks like Asiago and cheddar cheese crisps, nuts like sriracha roasted cashews, dried fruit power clusters. It goes on, and they are all so good. NatureBox recently made their service even better. Now you can order as much as you want, as often as you want, with no minimum purchase required, and you can cancel anytime. It's simple. Just go to naturebox.com and check out their snack catalog. There are over 100 snacks to choose from, and they're constantly adding delicious new snacks. Choose the snacks you want, and they'll deliver them right to your door. And with NatureBox, you will never get bored. There are new snacks each month inspired by real customer feedback. And if you ever try a snack you don't like, NatureBox will replace it for free. And right now, NatureBox is offering you guys, my listeners, 50% off your first order when you go to naturebox.com/savage. That's naturebox.com/savage for 50% off your first order. naturebox.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I am a 32-year-old bi woman, a married woman from the Midwest. Wanted to give you a call. My husband and I are finding ourselves in sort of a unique crossroads in our marriage. We've been married for almost 2 years, together for 6. We just recently got back from living abroad for 1 year and had a great adventure. And now we're back in our hometown, sort of ready for the next chapter. Our agreement upon moving overseas was that he wanted to start a family, while as I said, I need to have an experience, something amazing before that happens. I don't want to have a family and then regret not seeing the world and not, you know, having my moment in the sun, so to speak. So he agreed that we would do that, and it was a huge move for him. But I think he more or less agreed to that on the terms that when we got back, we would start a family and have children. I have always expressed to him that having children is not necessarily a priority to me. It's not something I've ever felt drawn to. I don't have those feelings that I need to be a mother, you know. He has always said that he thinks it would be a really great experience. My opinion, I think acid is a cool experience. This is a lifetime commitment. So as the date grew closer for us to return back home, I started to feel a lot of pressure that, holy shit, when we get back home, he's going to want to get me knocked up. And we had a lot of conversations about this while over there, sharing my fears, concerns about really, really doing this and how it would change our marriage. I also told him that I can think of hundreds of ways to enrich our lives that didn't involve having children. And it got to a point where I did come out and say, you know, I really don't think that this is something that I can give you. Now, I've told him it's not 100% off the table, but in so many words, don't get your hopes up. My real question for you is that I can't seem to get, you know, over the guilt of taking this experience away from him when he supported me and my adventurous side to move to Europe and do something that he was so uncomfortable with. I guess my justification has been that mine lasted a year and his thing, so to speak, lasts a lifetime. So how can I sort of have that final conversation, and how can I move forward without feeling like he's going to resent me for the rest of our marriage?
First, as anyone who's ever spent any time on a college campus in a college town can tell you, acid for some is a lifetime commitment. We've all seen them stumbling around Madison, Wisconsin. Second, to the time machine. Hurry, rush. Let's get to the time machine because you need to go back in time, not back before your trip to Europe or your year abroad that you now feel guilty about, because you had commodified that to some small degree. And it was a year in Europe for you and then a lifetime of parenting for both of you. But back before you married this man, because this is something that you want to be on the same page about before you get married. It's not something that you dicker about after you get married and bargain about after you get married. Seems to me that you have known all along that you do not want kids. And you fell in love with someone who did want kids. And you kept kicking that kid can down the road in hopes that, I don't know, a meteor strike, something, some outside force, some deus ex machina would come along and solve this problem for you. And that is not going to happen. So you need to take this off the table now. You need to take it off the table already. It's not an acronym, but it might be soon. You have nothing to feel guilty about except for marrying this man in the first place. You both should feel guilty about that, marrying each other when you weren't on the same page on this very important issue. But the longer you draw this out, the longer you pretend there's some small chance that you might want kids someday, that there's something he might be able to do or say that might convince you, that's what you should feel guilty about, drawing this out any longer than you already have. You go to him immediately and you say, I do not want kids. If we need to part over this so that you can marry someone who would like to have kids, we should declare the years we've been together a success. We can have a successful marriage that's behind us both. We can get out of this one alive. And you can go find a partner, find a woman who wants to have kids with you. I am not that woman. And I don't think I ever was. And I apologize. Perhaps you should apologize for not knowing your own mind well enough to be that emphatic and that clear about it in the first place before you married. But you've always suspected this, and now you know it for sure. And it is on you now, now that you know it for sure, to disclose this highly pertinent information to your husband about the rest of your life and the rest of his life, so that if he wants to make a different choice about who he's spending the rest of his life with, he can. But the longer you let him live in false hope that you're going to come around on this, the worse you should feel. That's where you should feel guilty. That's what you should feel guilty about. Allowing him to live in false hope 1 second longer than he needs to. And he doesn't need to anymore because you know that this is not something you want to do. And it's not something you're ever going to do. So give him the option of paying the price of admission to stay with you, which means no kids, or leaving you and finding someone that he can spend the rest of his life with who does want kids. And you get out there and find someone you can spend the rest of your life with, maybe in Europe, who doesn't want kids.
Audible Channels has a new original series, Where Should We Begin? With Esther Perel. This original audio series takes you inside Esther's office, one of the foremost authorities on modern love. Listen as she helps 10 anonymous couples sort through the intimate and profound details of their stories together. Hear real couples, candid conversations, and surprising truths. I've been a huge fan of Esther's for years and often recommend her, her books, her TED Talks to my listeners and readers. So you should be sure to check this out. Listen along with me. To learn more about the series, go to audible.com/ESTHER, then listen. Audible and Amazon Prime members listen for free. That's audible.com/Esther.
Hey, Dan. So here's my dilemma. I'm a waitress. I've been working at a restaurant for about 10 months. My manager is 21, and she's sleeping with our 50-year-old chef. And it's not the age difference that makes me and all the other employees so uncomfortable. It's the fact that our chef has a wife and a 2-year-old daughter in Florida. We're not in Florida, obviously. She comes to visit, and owner of the restaurant like takes our manager off the schedule so that the wife doesn't get suspicious and she can come in and eat. And they live together. Our manager and the chef, they live together. And when the wife comes to visit, the manager like leaves the house and stays with friends so that his wife and his child can stay in there in that house. We've all been putting up with this for months. They call each other baby, honey at work. They kiss, they make out in the basement. And not only is it just gallingly unprofessional, it just is so cruel. This woman has no idea. And she's just getting totally screwed over.
guy's a slime ball. I mean, he's on all of us. People have, like, quit. They're so uncomfortable with this situation. I don't know if I should tell her. Me and all the waitresses are like, just so fed up because this morning he was Skyping her, FaceTiming her in the restaurant, and our manager was, like, hiding outside of the frame and laughing and making comments that his wife is a dumb bitch and that he doesn't love his daughter. It's too much. This poor woman. I mean, it's been blatantly said that he's cheating on her. So it's not an open relationship. Yeah, we kind of all want to send her an anonymous email, but I don't know if we should stay out of it or if we should try to help her. We feel so bad for her. Like, we wait on her. And we know that her husband's making out with a 20-year-old girl in the basement every day.
You say this woman, the wife, has no idea that this is going on. And I'm sitting here wondering, thinking maybe she does have some idea that her husband is the scumbag that you say that he is. And it certainly sounds like he is. Because why does she live far away in another state? Perhaps she has some idea that her husband is a scumbag and she prefers to keep him at a multi-state distance. That maybe this arrangement where she lives in one state and he runs a restaurant and lives in another and has a house in another and he does whatever the fuck he wants and she maybe does whatever the fuck she wants while she raises their kid is her preferred scenario. Maybe she is Melania to his Donald and knows what a scumbag he is, but has made a deal with the devil that pays the bills and is relatively content with it. It's awful that the owner of this restaurant, I assume the chef is also the owner, and this manager are such vicious fucking shit bags. They deserve each other. You guys don't deserve to have to witness their assholery. You guys don't deserve to feel complicit in this adultery or the duping of this innocent woman, this third party who you assume to be innocent. You don't know her as well as you know them. You're not around her all the time. And you also don't know what their deal is. And it's important to remember, you say, we've all been putting up with this for months. It's not actually happening to you. This isn't, you're not the wife. And this isn't being done to you. What's being done to you is you're having to watch these two be assholes. I worked in a lot of restaurants, put myself through school working in restaurants. Everything from Maltenberger diners to 4-star French restaurants in Chicago. And there were assholes everywhere. And there were people having affairs. And every restaurant I ever worked at was kind of a fuck pile. And managers were fucking waiters and waiters were stealing food and busboys were fucking hostesses. It was just bananas. And I assume the wife knows. So if she knows, an email from you guys isn't going to tell her anything that she doesn't already know. She may feel additionally humiliated. Maybe part of their deal is do whatever you want. Be discreet. Don't make me look like an idiot or a fool. But I can't imagine that the email from you is going to come as a shock to the wife who lives far, far away, far enough away that some other woman can live with the chef owner full time without the wife knowing or, my hunch, caring. But it'll make you guys feel better to send that anonymous email, and the only people who could potentially be harmed by that anonymous email are your manager, who sounds like a vicious monster, and the chef, who sounds like an inconsiderate, lecherous asshole, which describes a lot of the chefs that I encountered, particularly in a French restaurant, when I was waiting tables. Go ahead. Usually my advice is to stay the fuck out of it. Not your monkeys, not your circus, not your marriage, not adultery that involves you or implicates you. But if you all feel implicated as witnesses, maybe you should tell. But it sounds to me like you hate your manager and you hate your chef because they are assholes. And, you know, one of the ways they demonstrate their assholery is by making you all feel uncomfortable all the time and complicit in the harming of this woman, the presumed harm of this other woman, of his wife. And you want to slap back. You want to punch him in his fucking face and her in her fucking face. Maybe you have my blessing in this instance to do just that. But again, my hunch, wife knows there's a reason she lives several states away and the email isn't going to come as a big shock to her and very likely nothing will change. I don't know about you guys, but I would rather gnaw my own leg out of a bear trap than go shopping for clothes. I do not have that gay gene, that gay shopping for clothes gene, which isn't exclusive to gay guys, it seems, because there's a lot of well-dressed straight guys in the world these days. But I don't have that gene. The musical comedy gene, the no gag reflex genes, got those. Not the clothes shopping gene. I haven't stepped foot in a mall or really a store to buy clothes in decades. So you can imagine, that means I'm still wearing clothes I went to college in. It's true. So you can imagine my delight when I heard about 5-4 Club. Each month, 5-4 Club sends you a curated box of 2 to 3 items that are handpicked to match the current season and your style. They've been helping men with fashion for over 15 years, and they ship to 100,000 men every month. And they know what they're doing. So if you don't, that is okay. If you're like me and you don't know what you're doing when it comes to clothes shopping, it is okay. 5-4 Club will help you build your wardrobe 1 month at a time. And having nice looking clothes makes a lot of guys feel more confident. And confidence is key, as we've discussed on this program many, many times, to getting your ass laid. So think about using 5-4 Club, where you get $120 worth of clothes for just $60 a month. You can pause or cancel at any time, no commitments. And as a 5-4 Club member, you'll also receive up to 50% off items in their online shop and access to exclusive member-only items, free shipping, and size exchanges. Go to 54club.com right now and enter promo code SAVAGE, S-A-V-A-G-E, and they'll give you 50% off your first month's package plus a free pair of sunglasses. That's 50% off your first package at 54 Club, spelled F-I-V-E-F-O-U-R-C-L-U-B.com, promo code SAVAGE. 54club.com, promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling as a queer woman in the Northeast. I was wondering, I've been with my boyfriend for almost a year, actually a year now, and we still haven't told each other that we love each other. And I definitely have those feelings for him, and I can't say that I've ever been in love or told a person that I love them, but I definitely do love him, but we just haven't said it, and I'm afraid if I say it to him, he's not going to say it back. What should I do?
Someone has to say it first. Might as well be you.
Hi, Dan. 20-year-old trans guy here. I have an etiquette question. My boyfriend and I both live with our respective parents. He works full-time, I work part-time, and we both attend college. His parents work from home, my sister is homeschooled, and my mom works part-time. We just started having sex, but it's really hard to find the time, especially with planning, transportation, toys, and the sheer amount of time that everything takes. Plus, sometimes my family randomly leaves and won't give me a time frame for when they'll be back, even when I ask, like, repeatedly. So here's my question. Would there be some polite way to ask my mom if she could maybe hang out at her fiancé's place for a night and take my sister with? She probably already suspects that we're having sex, but I think that directly asking her to clear off so that I can get it on would ease her out. What's the protocol here?
You're an adult. Your mom's an adult. You live at home. Presumably, hopefully, you kick in or contribute in some adult way. Maybe you're helping to pay rent. Maybe you're doing chores or some of the housework to earn your keep now that you're a college age and getting a college education adult. And I think you have a right to go to your mother, adult to adult, and say, you know, I have a boyfriend. You know that I am sexually active. You know that now. And pick your poison. Sometimes we're going to have sex in my room in the house that I help pay the rent for or help maintain. And you can be here or, you know, you can clear out and take my little sister with you and give me a night in the house alone, as I will for you. If, you know, you and your fiance want to hang out here and have a night free and clear, I will take my little sister out. I will take her to the movies. I will give you 4 or 5 hours. You can make this an exchange of run of the house time where your mother is free to enjoy the house without any of her kids around. And you should be free in exchange to enjoy the house every once in a while without a parent or a sibling around. That's one option. The other option is there'll be times when my door is closed and you might hear some things that a mother might not want to hear. And that's what happens when you have roommates. And sometimes it makes you uncomfortable when it's roommates you hear fucking, and when it's your own kid you hear fucking, it's going to make you doubly uncomfortable. But I'm not going to have sex in the place that I live with my partner. So let's figure this out. Hey, everybody, we're going to take a quick break from your calls because we wanted to share a couple of the amazing songs performed by our pal Rachel Lark at the show we did in Portland at Revolution Hall on Easter weekend. Rachel is a force of nature, and she performs here with her band, The Damaged Goods.
It's hard being a lady in this crazy world. The traps are set when you're a little girl. The rules seem to be that whatever we do is wrong somehow, and the ways that it's hard can vary based on your race, age, ethnicity, gender identity, or socioeconomic status. I tell ya, it's a bitch trying to unite all of us ladies to work together towards the common good. Instead, we just fight and tear each other apart the way that vultures would. I do it too. Like when this man asked me to write a song about a movement called Free the Nipple. I thought, really, dude? Come on. There's way more important shit facing women today, like the bombing of abortion clinics, or the gap in pay, or the prevalence of sexual assault, the lack of free childcare, the scrutiny we face for how we do our hair, the fact that I get called a bitch for being direct. But you, sir, are inspired by a movement that gets women to take their shirts off in the street, snap a picture, add a hashtag, and tweet. Well, forgive me if I'm not blown away by this one. I got a million problems and showing my tits ain't one. Oh no, look at me. I'm dismissing other women who are working towards equality. Oh snap, I did it too. Could it be that this world's big enough for all the things that women want to do? One thing that I hate most is women telling other women they're doing feminism wrong. Life's hard enough, everyone. So it's important that we all get along and support each other's struggles, as different as they may be. So now that I'm on board, here's why the nipple should be free. They try to booby traps, put booby straps on us, make us hate the weight that helps us procreate, use our bodies to sell their products, then call us obscene. Well, it's nipples, not breasts, that turn on a lady. The prevalence of boobs without nipples is shady. The message we get is our breasts aren't for us, they're not for our pleasure, they're objects of lust. Well, it's time we get picky, it's time we agree. My boobs aren't for you, my boobs are for me. You see, the nipple is a symbol of our pleasure. And that's why we must free the nipple on the streets. We must free the nipple on the beach. We must free the nipple. Free ourselves. We must free the nipple from the milk. You know what, guys? I wrote that song like last year, and the political reality has just made me realize lately that it's just like, that song's just like way too nuanced for the world we're currently living in. Like, we need to just like really bring it back to basics. You know what I mean? Like feminism at like a first grade reading level, you know? So, okay, this is my like Trump era feminist anthem. Okay. Women are people. Women are people. They have thoughts and feelings. Women are people. Women, they're people. They have thoughts and feelings. Your mom, she's a person. And your teacher, she's a person. And little girls are people too. And nurses, they're people. Even strippers, they're people. No matter what it is they do. Women are people, women are people. They have thoughts and feelings. It's true. Women are people, women, they're people. They have thoughts and feelings. It's not nice to touch them if you haven't asked first. And it's not nice to brag about grabbing their genitals. It's not nice to make it so they don't have healthcare, because they're the ones that make the babies. Here we go, everyone. Women are people. Women are people. They have thoughts and feelings. Very good. Women are people. Women, they're people. They have thoughts and feelings. Really good, you guys. Give yourselves a hand.
Again, that was Rachel Lark and the Damaged Goods. They are on tour right now. Catch them in Portland at Dante's on June 4th, in Vancouver at the Biltmore Cabaret on June 5th, and in Seattle at Columbia City Theater on June 6th. You can find more cities, more dates, and ticket info on Rachel's website at www.rachellark.com/tour.
Hi, Dams. I'm a 27-year-old straight male who recently just got back into the dating game after breaking up with my girlfriend of 3 years. And prior to this, I was, I guess you could say, a serial dater, which meant that I didn't often date more than one woman at once. Instead, I just kind of dated one woman at a time casually until it either became serious and we had a relationship, or we just kind of broke it off. Now I'm using Tinder and I'm dating more than one woman at a time. I roughly go on about 2 or so dates every week or so with different women. I'm noticing a bit of an issue with myself as far as performing sexually is concerned. I found that I get very intimidated by women whom I perceive to be being very attractive to the point where they are almost out of my league, so to speak. And then with women who I am not as attracted to on a physical level, but still attracted to, of course, I find I'm much more comfortable with in the bedroom and I'm able to perform better. But with women that I have this crush on, specifically this one woman, I have trouble getting it up. We'll call her Lauren. And I'm very much into Lauren, and she seems to be very much into me. We connect on many levels, more so than with any other woman I've been with since my breakup. And I just really like being around her, and I think she's probably one of the most gorgeous people I've ever met. But the first and most recent time in which we became intimate, I could not get it up. I was definitely aroused, but for some reason, my penis just said no. It was a very disappointing moment for me. I was still able to make her come without any penetrative sex, and she had a great time and wants to see me again. But I am worried that my own nervousness around her is going to prevent me from being able to perform next time, and it's going to constantly be a cycle of me going down on her and catering to her kinks without penetration until she gets bored of me. This hasn't happened in a very long time, not since I was much younger, when I was having trouble getting it up around a woman whom I had crushed on for months before asking out. I think it's a nervousness thing. Is there a way to get over this? Or is this sort of my body telling me something about my sexual incompatibility?
The higher the stakes, the softer your cock. That's the problem here. You like this woman. You're very attracted to this woman, and not just sexually. Maybe she's one of those women who intimidates your dick a little bit because you perceive her to be out of your league. But emotionally, you guys really click. So it matters. Suddenly the sex matters in a way that sex with somebody that you could take or leave or
literally take, you took them and you left them. It matters more than that. And it induces a kind of nervous tension that is deflating your cock. The workaround for this is not to partner with people you couldn't give a shit about. That's not a successful mating dating strategy. The corrective for this is to be honest with her and pay her this kind of weird, flaccid compliment. When I'm with somebody who is really hot and I really like, initially, at first, my dick is kind of scared off because the stakes are so high, but I'll catch a groove. In the meantime, our first few encounters, fingers, toys, tongues, kinks, we can be intimate in these great and crazy ways that will demonstrate that, you know, with me, you're going to have an awesome and varied sex life. It's not all going to be just defaulting to PIV, toys and tongues and play and kinks and all these other things. And eventually my dick will kick into gear as I become more confident in this relationship and more secure with you. But at least at first, yeah. And having that conversation is going to take the pressure off your dick, because then you're going to go into sex with her without her having an expectation that you are going to bring the granite. You're going to go into sex with her without her thinking the sex is going to necessarily be about your dick. And once the focus and pressure is off your dick, that often helps people who are having this exact problem get hard. When you don't need the erection because you're going to have sex where your erection is irrelevant or sidelined or not emphasized, you may relax and suddenly get the fuck hard. You also might want to throw some Viagra and cock rings into the mix too.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 23-year-old straight cisgendered woman calling from Pennsylvania. Something happened that I'd like to get your take on, as I'm not really sure how to understand it. So I received messages on Tinder, mind you, it's a Sunday morning, from a guy who told me he lost a bet last night at a bachelor party and needed to strip for a random Tinder match. I went with it, and next thing you know, his dick, huge, huge fucking dick, is on the center of my phone screen. He did a little dance, and then we hung up. We messaged a few times since, but I'm feeling a little uneasy. He wouldn't show me his face. No one from this quote-unquote bachelor party seemed to be around. He had matched with me on Tinder, and now I'm wondering, was this all an act of voyeurism? I'm really curious to get your opinion and just kind of fully understand the situation.
It was an act of exhibitionism. You were the voyeur. His was an act of exhibitionism. He's kinky. And rather than just own that, because a lot of people are sex negative and kink negative, he framed his kink in such a way where it was this sad and tragic thing he was being forced to do, not this sexy fucking thing he wanted to do. That he was helpless in the face of having lost this bet and he had to do this. And would you please help him out? What I would do if I were you is write him and say, yeah, no, that's not what was going on. There was no one else there, right? You like showing off your big hot dick. And if, caller, you liked seeing his big hot dick, tell him that. And if you enjoy getting dick pics, because there are some women out there who do. I know everyone says that, don't send dick pics, and nobody should send unsolicited dick pics. But there are certainly people out there who enjoy getting dick pics in their inbox, on texts, and not all the people who enjoy that thing are gay men. Some women do too. If you are one of those women who enjoy it, you have kind of met the right guy. By accident. He told you a lie he may not have needed to tell you to earn your sympathy, to play on your sympathy, help me out. But you should tell him that he doesn't have to game you. He doesn't have to lie to you. If indeed you enjoyed the show and would like to see that show again, tell him so.
Hi, I'm calling in response to the caller from episode 552. Who had an affair with her friend's husband and wants to know how she can contact that person. I've actually been that person who had my husband cheat on me with a friend. And I can tell you, I 100% did not want to hear from either of them after that. I think she needs to take a step back and completely cut off contact with her friend, at least for a few months, and give that person some time to calm down, because that girl is just going to be so angry and full of hate, and she does not want to hear from her. Also, she doesn't sound very sorry, so she might want to actually be sorry before she calls that person.
Hey, I'm a cis woman in the greater Boston area calling in response to the weightlifter. I also lift. I'm frequently one of the few, sometimes the only women in the weight room. And I just wanted to say, God bless you and your manly, muscly, shaven chest. I think that's really hot. You should keep doing what makes you feel good. And if this gets played, I'd just like to tell all the other cis women out there, the idea that lifting makes you bulky is a total myth. What it does is it makes you strong, and it makes it a lot easier to do everyday tasks like picking stuff up. So, ladies, get into the weight room, and guys, if you want to shave, go for it.
This is for the caller on episode 552, who was concerned about shaving his chest hair. Sweetie, as a cock cage wearing, high heel rocking, out and proud kinky sissy, I can tell you that it takes a lot more than a bit of manscaping to be a sissy in the modern adult world. My advice to you is to shave what makes you happy. And for your friends, well, I suggest leaving the name calling for the middle school playground.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Tomorrow night, Wednesday, May 31st, Hump is in Montreal for the first time for one show only at 7:30 at Cinema L'Amour. And I'll be in Chicago on June 15th for a live Savage Love. Get your questions answered by me personally. Savage Love Live is at the Music Box Theater at 8 p.m. More info and tickets for both shows are at www.humpfilmfest.com. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Rachel Lark on Twitter at RachelLarkMusic. And again, find out more about her tour, which is on right now, at RachelLark.com/tour. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Risk Youth and Nancy. We will all be back at you next week. Another installment of the Savage Lovecast next week.